racism. We will not bow down to
injustice.
We will not bow down to
exploitation. I'm gonna stay.
You in jeopardy. Yo, yo, set me free. Don't hinder me, let me be.
I'm out here for freedom. I got the heat in case you need them. A straight soldier. Ain't nobody told ya.
We've been together since I created border. The African border celebration is in order.
My only chance of being free is to fly within me. And it's illegal to kill a freaking eagle. A bird is never more important than my people. I guess we didn't need him, so I took away his freedom.
And you're listening to The Struggle here again, like we are every week, every Friday night. It's Olivia.
Cable 90.7 FM.
90.7, baby.
Thank you for tuning in.
Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, Olivia.
How are you?
I'm okay. And I know that I'm about to be better because you're about to drop some very important information.
I know. I'm so excited. I'm waiting for so long to talk about this on this show.
We've kind of skirted around it a few times.
Yeah.
But now you can put all of the doubt to rest. What is it that you've been working on all this time?
So before I say this, I should say that we have a guest in the studio today. Their name is Mason Mimi. They're one of my best friends in the whole world. And we are both here tonight. I'm always here, but we're here tonight to speak on the fact that our workplace, Growing Seeds Learning Community, just went public and we are unionizing. We're so excited. We've been, woohoo! Yes, yes, yes. I'm so excited. If you are a loyal listener of this show, you've heard me talk about working in childcare, working in preschool a lot. If you were last week, maybe you heard a little hint that was dropped on accident. But yeah, we're unionizing.
And we will be one of the first in the U.S.
If not the first.
One of the first, if not the first, early childhood education centers to unionize.
Yeah. If we private early childhood, early child care, early child education centers, we will be. If we get our contract, we will be. Frankly, that we need to do the research to make sure. But as far as we can tell, we'd be the only private ECE school with a contract.
So let's back it up then, so that people can understand the importance of this. So why? Why union? Why go for this in the first place?
One of the most important parts is that we believe all workers deserve a union. And some of the things that we have been organizing for and getting together and talking about is that we believe we deserve better wages and benefits and better supports, that we want to be active in deciding what they look like, and better sanitation in our working conditions.
And one thing that we're coming up against a lot that I think is speaks to how important it is that we are specifically organizing at our specific workplace is that unionizing and just like the culture around unionizing and the response generally from managers and bosses of places where people unionize is viewed as like a tantrum or like something that you do if you are being treated horrifically. And we are not, like, none of us have delusions that we are being treated in some horrific manner at our job compared to the conditions of people at in factories or in other, I don't know, other places where people think that the exploitation is more glaring. But just to add on to what Mason said, unionizing is not a tantrum. Unionizing is not retaliation, and unionizing is not like something that you do only when things get to the worst they can possibly get. People fought and died for the right to unionize, and the most important thing to us is that it will maintain the long-term wellness of the school that we do love, and of so that people can continue to do the work that we think is so important, and that will benefit us, and that will benefit the children that we look after. I've said it before on the show. I have cystic fibrosis. For being very frank.
That's why we never hit the cough button.
So we'll never hit the cough button. Even if you don't have cystic fibrosis, you can come up in here and cough.
And cough. You can come in here cough. And cough. I'm sorry, you can cough. Sorry.
I'm sorry. And frankly, I'm not on my school's health insurance. And I don't think it's a health insurance package that's particularly awful. But if I was on it, I would die because the standard is so low and only really acknowledges people who have, in quotes, like typical health experiences. And so, a myriad of things. The work is deeply undervalued when truly we're doing the same amount of work as people do across all of their like spheres where people are working with children, whether you're like a therapist or a teacher. Like, we do as much work in our field, and yet we are paid so little compared to that of like our peers in the field of child care in general. I'm pretty sure everybody at our job is making under 20 an hour. We deserve comprehensive pay and benefits so that we can be the best teachers that we can, and so that we can live our lives the way that we have a human right to, which is like comfortably comfortably, happily, passionately able to do the work that we love to do. Like, we're already there for a reason. We love the work. This is not, again, looping back to the beginning, this is not a retaliation. This is us expressing our passion for childcare by fighting for better conditions for ourselves so we can be better teachers.
Have you had any media coverage about this yet?
Yeah, we've had media coverage from labor press, from some small, publications, I guess, covering stuff going on in labor organizing, and on KBOO. I'm here right now, and I'll be on labor radio next week. So
shout out Amanda and Jamie.
We
love labor radio.
We definitely haven't gotten the media coverage that we would like yet in terms of like scale and scope. But I think, again, this especially as the political climate in Portland is moving towards this side, towards universal preschool now being on the ballot in November. And the fact that we would be one of the first early childhood centers to have a contract if we win, I think that people will definitely have their attention on us. And our Facebook page low-key popped off, y'all. So
yeah, we're on Facebook and Instagram.
Can you give the information?
Yes, our Facebook is Growing Seeds Workers Union, and our Instagram, I believe, is GS Workers Union.
So for people who are hearing about this that want to support you at this point, what is the level of engagement that you want people to do?
Well, one of the big things is we have a community support rally happening on Saturday, March 7th. It'll be from 1 to 3 at Peninsula Park. And another big thing is we definitely want people to share everything that they can on social media, or if you want a flyer about the community support rally, you know, those are a lot of the big ones.
And yeah, you can reach out to through any of our social media with asks on that. The community support rally is the main thing.
Yeah.
Well, I just asked about the media attention that you've gotten to gauge whether or not it's been fair, because sometimes it is not. Mm-hmm. But I guess if the labor press covered you, like what came out of that article that you would want people to know about?
They included a quote from me that I'm pretty sure said something to the effect of what I've said on the show so far, which is just that we deserve we deserve fully supportive wages and benefits, because we love this work and we want to do the best that we can. And I think that was pretty much the gist of the article. They refer to us as a daycare in the article, which me and some of my coworkers posted about and didn't necessarily love. Not that people who work in daycares are not also doing hard work, but I think that it speaks to the larger issue that like has us in the position that we're in, where teachers who teach children under 5 are looked at as kind of lowly and different, because we're not a daycare. We're not a daycare at all. We like are developing curriculum and doing like we're developing curriculum the way that all teachers do, just for children who are under 5 years old. Mm. We do the same work as teachers. In pretty much every respect, we just don't have the same institutional and like historical backing behind us, and so that was something that there have been interesting discussions about amongst us.
So I know that the Universal Preschool Now campaign that you touched on earlier, I just want to catch people up. It's a initiative that came out of the DSA, the Democratic Socialist of America. A lot of the people that are around the Socialist Feminist Caucus. So shout out to y'all. Thank you for this work. This has been a long time going now, like at least a year people have been meeting and planning for this to go on the ballot and hopefully win. So what it will do is make all four-year-olds in Multnomah County, which is where Portland is at, have access to early education to get them ready for kindergarten and give parents and guardians a much deserved break, because they're not going to have to pay for it. This is going to be taxing the rich to pay for early childhood education. So that's what the Universal Preschool Now campaign is about. And they also have a lot of information that they do want people to go to their website, their social media, Universal Preschool Now, out of the Portland DSA. So that's what you were referring to earlier. So yes. Please, again, just talk about how you think that that is going to dovetail when it goes to the ballot with the unionizing campaign.
I mean, it's really exciting because I think it is a coincidence that these two things are happening like parallel to each other. And I think that the two things happening at once like really helps, they really help each other and speaks to the fact that like this is the direction that we're going to in Portland in terms of workers' rights, and also just finally acknowledging like early childhood education as something that is critical to our society, to helping children, and I think a step toward understanding children as a marginalized group, which is something that I talked a lot about on the show that is in a discourse that I think is like talked about regularly.
We'll talk about the discourse.
Talk about the discourse.
Well, honey. Like what?
I mean, I think I feel like it really is just as simple as children are ignored. We like love to talk about oppression and privilege, and people sometimes will throw out ageism and this very like,
I love how you said we love to talk about oppression and privilege.
We love to talk about oppression and privilege. We do, like especially in Portland where there's like a lot of like great organizing, and with how much great organizing there are also a lot of people who do a lot of virtue signaling and who engage in a lot of politics that kind of oversimplify this idea of like oppression and privilege, and people love to talk about it as we've established, and people love to throw out ageism sometimes in this very like nebulous and simple way where they're just like, oh, ageism, it's when we treat old people like garbage. But
well, teach them a better way, because you know they're trying.
I'm hard on people. I'm hard on myself. You know, we don't need to get into that though.
Next week
we'll talk about why I'm hard on myself.
But people who are coming to these ideas, I think we should be telling them that we're thankful that they are developing a conception of oppression. Mm-hmm. And that they want to fight against it, even if the advice that they've gotten, if what they've read and what they've heard has been not particularly helpful, well, then that means that it's on us to be able to show them a better way, like with the struggle.
So the better way is to understand that most of the atrocities that occur in the world happen to children. If we're talking about intersectionality, which we are a lot of the time, all of the various like identities that you can have that subject you to a harsher experience under capitalism, being a child within that is going to exacerbate that, because you don't have control. You don't have control of your life. You don't have control over your body. You don't have control over where you go. You literally are owned by somebody. And you're seen as basically having no, like nothing valuable to contribute to society, despite the fact that you are deeply marginalized. Like, children are the only group who I think the general public might be willing to agree that children, and I think this is changing, but children are A, marginalized and like in a certain way, and at the same time have nothing important to say to how they might be liberated from that marginalization. Mm-hmm. You would never say that about any other marginalized group, but somehow with children, we understand that they like are seen as kind of like pushed to the side, discardable, just kids, and are marginalized in this way, and don't and need more and don't have control, and are abused in so many sites of oppression. At the same time, children have nothing to contribute to how that we might like come out of that, which is horrible. And children in schools are like at the site where the conditions for mass incarceration are created. So again, like this side of oppression that we talk about a lot, mass incarceration and anti-blackness, that does, like, that applies as much to black children as it does to black adults, because black children are the ones whose parents are being locked up. Black children are being incarcerated when they get to a certain age. And as young as preschool, we understand that black children are, and children of color in general, but mostly black children, are being funneled into from school into prison through the school-to-prison pipeline.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mason, do you have anything you want to add?
Oh, you make it very difficult for people to add anything when you go off like that, Olivia.
I don't know what else to say.
I'll put it out there. I'm a little bit sick today because I work with children in slightly unsanitary working conditions.
Can you talk about that? Are you allowed to?
About the work, the sanitation?
Yeah, and then walk us through, like, what is it like a day in the life?
A day in the life.
Yeah, but first talk about sanitation.
Yeah, teachers are expected to do most of the cleaning at our locations, which is absolutely absurd because that's a lot to expect from teachers, where we, like, me and Olivia both have the same schedule. We work from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with an hour lunch. And kids often get picked up, like, at 5:50 p.m. So there's, like, not very much time for teachers to clean classrooms. Recently, the location we work at has gotten weekend professional cleaning services, but during the week we are cleaning the classrooms throughout the whole day.
And the bathrooms.
And the bathrooms. Like, the children's bathrooms, yeah.
Cleaning, period. We are janitors during the week, period.
Yeah. So that's what we're talking about. People get sick a lot. I'm sick a lot. I'm sick right now. And a day in the life is wild. So we get in at 9. The school opens at 7:30 in the morning. And we have different positions, Olivia and I, but I work as a support staff. So I go wherever they need me. So yeah. I often do, like, break schedules where I'm going into a classroom for like 10 to 15 minutes and then a different classroom for 10 to 15 and a different one. And then we'll often give teachers like an hour to an hour and a half of planning time. Sometimes there's like smaller tasks that have to get done that I do, like laundry or something. Or sometimes I sub, and today I subbed in a classroom. So I have to get to know pretty much all of the kids at the center in the position that I'm at, and all of the parents along with that.
So what about the parents and the kids? Tell us about them. Without dropping any names.
No, we can't.
And also, here's some hand sanitizer. Oh my gosh. Don't get me sick. Please don't get me sick. Okay.
I mean, the parents have been very supportive. And I don't know how much we can go into that because I don't want to make anybody feel bad for not being supportive. But the parents have been extremely supportive, as I think you should be. If you are lucky enough, blessed enough, privileged enough to be able to send your child to care before they are 5, because in a lot of places in the community I grew up in, people think that that is just the norm. But most people don't have access to that. So if you are lucky enough, blessed enough to send your child to care before they are 5, you should, the first thing I would do before I send my child anywhere is ask, and this is actually something I heard from another one of our coworkers, Ari, friend of the show, also member of Critical Resistance.
And also in the Growing Seas Workers Union.
Yeah, and also in the Growing Seas Workers Union, because we have no separation of boundaries in our friendships, and we're all connected and have been since we were 18. It doesn't really matter. Anyway.
Shout out to Sue. That's where it all started.
Yeah.
The Portland State University Student Union is such a petri dish for activists. Like, people who have been in SUSU are now, like, leading really important stuff in this city. Like, there's something about that fight, that the long struggle against the administration for arming campus security. Disarm PSU was started, championed, and hopefully will be won by student activists on campus. But that's where a lot of y'all cut your teeth. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. now people are seeing what kind of result, you know, came from all of that struggle. So mm-hmm. thank you, Mason. Thank you, Olivia.
I'm putting my hands on my heart because I get so emotional. Yeah. About mm-hmm. this RMPS.
So a lot of them went on to be members of Critical Resistance. Yeah. That long friend of the show, one of the first interviews that I ever did when KBOO gave me the mic, was to talk to Ashton Ruga and mm-hmm. Anna So.
Yeah.
some of the longtime members of Critical Resistance Portland chapter. Critical Resistance, of course, is a national organization that seeks to abolish the prison industrial complex through a fantastic education program. Thank you very much. And it was started in part by our icon, Angela Davis, and is supported by really important thinkers who I think will continue to move the line in terms of how people think about police and prisons, surveillance, and all of the ways that the prison industrial complex has such a corrosive effect on our lives, and is able to work with community doing coalition work like Care Not Cops, which we've talked about many, many times on the show, which seeks to decouple mental health services from policing, which is very important, and hopefully will also be successful and will win that struggle too. But many of them went on to Critical Resistance, and some of them are now working to fight for union rights in early childhood education.
Yeah.
So thank y'all. And so I just wanted to give people some history, Olivia.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So Ari, a member of Critical Resistance, said this to me earlier today, and I agree with her. And basically what it is that if you, parents should be happy that we're unionizing, and many of them are and are being super supportive. And to explain that, if you are able to send your child to care before they are five, the first thing you should ask before you choose your child care place is, how much are the people who are working with your children getting paid? Mm-hmm. What kind of benefits do they have? Are they being supported? Because you cannot be, like, the thing that excites me, one of the things that excites me the most about this campaign, for me personally, one of them is, being the prospect of being able to stay at this job, because if I got kicked off my parents' health insurance at 26 and then this job was my only option, I would die, because I have a chronic illness that will kill me, and I do, and there is no feasible way under capitalism for me to gather the funds for me to pay for my medication, like, period. So, and I like my job, I would like to stay there. And the second thing is that I will, with that, I'm gonna be a better teacher if I get paid more and if I have everything that I need. And I think a lot of people in our field, us included, are made to feel like we should just be satisfied because we're getting better than most people in a field that is so deeply undervalued, inherently undervalued. Like, I am continually blown away when I just sit with my thoughts and think about how, like, this is my field of expertise. Like, I have a degree in child and family studies with a specialization in early childhood education. Ooh. I've worked with children since I was 15 years old. Like, this is my area of expertise. Early childhood is what I know, and I want to be a teacher. I don't want to be an administrator. And
say, like, that.
And there's no, and this is it. Like, I'm, in terms of being an early childhood education teacher, I've reached my peak, and I can't afford, like, I'm living right within my means. If I made any less, I'd be like, I would barely be able to pay my bills. And I'm grateful that I can pay my bills and support myself, like, so grateful. And I know that I'm doing better than most other people in this field. Yeah. And that's absolutely not enough.
It's hard to find under capitalism, just enough to get you by. So when you manage to eke that out, you almost feel like you're cheating the system. That's so terrible. What, Mason?
The kids have been really excited this week. We have these great growing seeds.
You're talking to the kids about it.
Yeah, because
how are you talking to the kids about it?
Well, we have these buttons. So we have these growing seeds workers union buttons with this really cute logo that was made by Charlie, who is Charlie Tattoos You on Instagram. They're
also
great.
Also former Portland State University student union members.
Also.
Very incestual.
But they're really cute for anyone who hasn't gone and looked at our social media. It's the logo's on there, but it's like a little fist holding a red crayon with some circles around it. We have That's these cute. Buttons, and we have other buttons that have, I don't have my pizza one right now, but we have pizza buttons because we're having a pizza social for the families this weekend. So it's like, it has like a pizza on it, and it says like, it has like the bit.ly link on it and says like that it's for families to come to. And we were wearing those to hopefully get more parents to ask us about it. But the kids have asked us about them a lot. Like they're so, if they see the pizza buttons, they're so interested. And that first day on Tuesday, they like almost all the teachers at our location were wearing either both or one, at least one of the buttons. And the kids were noticing, they're like, how come you both have those buttons? Or like, why are you wearing that? Like they wanted to know. So we were like, this is what it is. And that's how it comes up. Like we just let the kids ask about
it. How do you explain it to a child? If there are any children listening right now.
If you're listening right now. A lot of the times it depends which ones they're asking about. So if they ask about the pizza one, I'll say it's like a party that's for all the families to come to that teachers are going to be at. And then the logo one we have, I just tell them like the teachers have been meeting together and we are deciding to form a group and it'll make the school better.
Yeah.
And I've used the word union with them too. I've told them it's called a union. And it depends how much other questions they ask, but that's like the gist of how I explain it to them.
Yeah. Most of my kids in my class, I ask them what a union is and then they always say they don't. And then tell them it. I'm like, you know how me and my co-teacher, I'm not going to say her name, though she's also a friend of the show because we don't have any boundaries. you know how me and co-teacher, this is our job and we're at work now, like your parents are at work right now, and they're always like, yeah. And I'm like, so a union is when workers get together and they tell people who are in charge of their work that they want to have a better workplace. I'm like, we're trying to make the school better. And we've talked to our kids a lot in my classroom about like needs. Like we talk about like we talk to our kids about police and like how and stealing, because we had like a break-in over the summer at the school, and we were like, and we told our kids like people steal things because they don't have what they need, and I hope that the police don't hurt them or catch them because they got what they needed. They needed food and they needed money. So with that like background for some of them, like I need money for food and medicine so I can have a healthy body so I can be a good teacher.
That reminds me of one time I was in your classroom subbing, and I came in, there was the second half of rest time, and one of the kids had woken up and was like really sad when they woke up. And so I just let them sit on my lap and we were just like chatting for most of it. And I opened my phone and I was house hunting, which I now have a new house to move into. But at the time I was like looking at Zillow and stuff, and I opened it when it was on that, and they were just like, that's a map. And I was like, yeah, it is. And we were just like talking about it. And then they clicked on one of the things and saw one of the houses, and they're like, are you going to move there? I was like, no, I can't afford that. And they were like, what? Like, so shocked that, like, I can't, like, just go wherever I want.
My kids.
But that just reminded me of that.
Friend of the show, Ari, drives me to work because we're roommates. I don't have to explain. and so we drive together. But before Ari worked there, I took the bus. And my kids would ask me a lot, like, how I got to work and if I took the bus. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them. And they would say, well, why don't you drive? Like, because, frankly, like, we go to a school where most people who go there are like very privileged to be able to pay to go to that school, and most of them drive their kids to school and it's always been that way anyway. So they're like, why do you take the bus? I'm like, because I don't know how to drive. And they're like, why don't you know how to drive? Well, because I can't afford a car, so I haven't learned how to drive. And they're just like, well, why can't you just get a car? Like, so those like discussions are there with children, which is my favorite part about this job, is just like, I don't know, people just continually underestimate like children's capacity to like understand the world around them. But actually they develop like with trust from the adults around them, with truth, and just like not telling them lies, they develop better understandings and perspectives on a lot of things than many adults that I've met. Like, no cap, like 100%. Like the 4-year-olds in my class have like their understanding of like policing and criminality and money and borders and immigration has already, like, they've already stretched their capacity to understand those things farther than a lot of adults ever will.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank Mason.
thank you.
Don't thank me. I don't know. I'm joking.
So, once again, we are speaking to the Grown Seeds Workers Union members as they roll out their campaign. So tell us about how far you've come and how far you have to go until, let's say, you have a contract and you're working under better conditions and wages. Like, where are you at in that process?
We are coming up on the official vote. It was this past Monday that we announced our intention to unionize to all of our admin and to our boss. And it was, we've been like meeting and organizing for about a year before that, before going public. So it's, we're the first weekend, and we're hoping that the official vote will be within a couple of weeks at this point. And once we get the official vote, by then we will also have figured out like who's on our bargaining team, because we're going to start like doing, because we have to like do elections for that as well.
What's a bargaining team?
A bargaining team are the people who are going to be at the table with the boss and or the her lawyers, and will be in those meetings for, in all reality, about a year and a half to 2 years for the first contract. That's about how long the first one takes. But yeah, the bargaining team are the people who are at the actual table in those meetings whenever they happen, and are like taking stuff back to the general membership and like going through all the nitty gritty pretty much.
How many employees do you have that you're organizing?
About 77 across all three. There's three locations. I don't know if we said that, but they're all the Growing Seeds Learning Community, but they're one's up in North Portland, which is the one we both work at, and the other one's in Northeast Portland in the Irvington area, and the other one is on Reed's campus.
Okay, so the elephant in the room, what has the reaction been like from your boss?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think we can say too much, but I mean, our school is one that truly does value, and I, for obviously there's reasons that we're unionizing, and like all work, basically all work under capitalism is exploitative, so there's that, and all workers deserve a union.
I love that on the struggle, that's how you that's the baseline.
Yeah, we understand this. Like, I don't know, we're unionizing. Like, I'm not unionized, but I'm not I'm not excited about this union because I think that we work in these like particularly horrific conditions, like I already said. And so, yeah, casting aside for a second that all work under capitalism is exploited unless you are in the owning class. Our work at Blue Picture, our
we like, gotta get a soundboard. My funk master flex, and I can just hit buttons when you say this stuff that is just so good that I feel like it needs to have a sound to go with it.
Oh, I would love that, Jaron.
And Jaron, our producer, get us a soundboard, would you?
Yeah. Oh God. Anyway, casting that aside for a second, I do truly believe that the administration at our workplace values having a high level of care and respect for children, and does value social justice. And I know that because I am able to freely discuss things with my children in my classroom that I know that my mother, who works in public school, wouldn't be able to, and I really appreciate that. And I think that one of the, this is how I'm going to answer your question in a tactful way. I think that one of the best learning moments that will come out of us winning this fight for our union is bringing, and this is something that a lot of people in the city could stand to do probably, is bringing in a valuing, a championing, and an understanding of the importance of workers' rights into this established value of social justice that we already have. I do truly believe that our workplace values social justice. That's part of why I work there. I think it's part of why I was hired there. I think it's part of why a lot of people were hired there. We have a lot of queer workers there. We have a lot of people of color working there. We have a lot of trans people working there. Like it's, and that's wonderful. And like that shouldn't be diminished or undervalued. But what does need to happen is that learning moment of understanding where workers' rights is and cannot be divorced from the broader idea of valuing social justice. If we value social justice, then we cannot discard a championing of workers' rights. People have rights to certain conditions. People have rights to certain knowledge. That's what our school believes. And it's our right to unionize. And I don't have to give you any other reason except for that I'm a worker and I'm doing wage labor, and unionizing is the only way I can guarantee that somebody, that a new boss will come in one day and get rid of me or treat me more unethically than I'm already being treated just by nature of the fact that we're engaging in wage labor.
Can you just pull that out? Because, like, you mean if a boss comes in,
yeah,
and they're not as good to you,
yeah,
then you're vulnerable because you don't have a contract.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Workers, people, especially people who are like, yeah, working for wages by the hour, their conditions are based on the will of the person who owns the place that they're working at. Yeah. It's charity.
Yeah.
When you work at a workplace, and you're being treated well comparatively to other people in your field, mm-hmm. that's charity.
Ooh.
And charity is wonderful, but it's not sustainable. Okay. What is sustainable is people...
See, this is one of the soundboard moments. Yeah. That's so cool. Okay.
What is sustainable is people having a contract that workers buy into, the people at the bottom buy into, that can continually work to reflect the needs of the workplace and the specific people who are working there. So instead of it being the workplace being fluid based on the will of the owner, it can be fluid based on the needs of the workers.
So you would be working with the ILWU, the International Longshore mm-hmm. Workers Union, and that is not what people usually think of when they yeah. think of educators. So do you want to talk about why you wanted to work with that union?
Yeah, we chose ILWU Local 5 in large part because of like the basis of like progressive politics that the ILWU has, specifically Local 5 has. And also because it gives us really a lot of space to be the ones that are like running our campaign in a really great way. Like, we're not like answering to Local 5 at all. Like, we're not like, they're not like telling us what to do or how to do it necessarily. We can ask for advice. They like help us out along the way whenever we need. But this like is our campaign, and it's very apparent that it's our campaign.
Yeah. And I think it's, there is kind of a discussion that there is a question that pops up, and whether or not we want to continue to bring it up is something that has been discussed. But I think it's important where it's, we're like, well, why didn't you join a teachers union, or why mm-hmm. didn't you join like the ILWU? Just people hear longshore workers and they're like, why are they representing preschool workers? Well, mm-hmm. they Local 5 specifically represents veterinary techs, the Oregon Historical Society. They represent PALS books, and with those people who they represent,
vet techs, the Historical Society, museum, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and a bookstore, mm-hmm. PALS. Okay, yeah. So they're already very diverse.
They're already yeah. very diverse. Okay. And there are similarities across some of the different structures that those workers are in, specifically us compared to like the vet techs, which last week when Ellis was talking about Columbia River vet techs, I almost blew up our spot on the radio because I was so excited to hear about our union siblings. Anyway, but
union siblings.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah. Union siblings.
Yeah, because you know they always say brothers and sisters.
Yeah,
so
no,
you live
no.
out and leave on non-binary people. Hello.
Local 5, it's union siblings.
Love that. Okay.
And also remember that when we win our contract, we will be one of the first, if not the first, private preschool center with a union contract. So like we're setting a precedent. And we believe in ILWU. We believe in their politics. We've been very supportive. And we're impressed by the work they've done across other workplaces in our city through Local 5. And they have made this, and they have allowed this campaign to be our own. And we, yeah, we're thrilled to be with them.
So that is, when you talked earlier about like the culture of union organizing in Portland and like the, like how Portland is different than other cities.
Mm-hmm.
Like shout out to the Bargerville Workers Union and yes. the Little Big Union, both out of IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, who are pushing the boundaries and asserting that fast food workers do not necessarily have to be poverty wage workers, and mm-hmm. they're pushing those boundaries, and they've really helped to ignite much more energy on the Portland left and infusing more of a workers' rights ethos to our movements and to the struggle. So if you want to say a little bit about like how that has inspired you all to undertake this, where people in another city that haven't seen that example might not have been so bold.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say except for just like that is one of the things that I do truly love about Portland, is just the diversity of ideologies and organizing here, and like specifically with union organizing. While union density across the country continues to be so low, especially compared to like where it was out of the gains of the labor movement, Portland has continually in the last like 5 years set these new precedents for union organizing. So like, and especially like, we are the Growing Seeds Workers Union, but I know for me and for my other from the other people who are organizing in the union, who do come from the background of critical resistance and do come from the background of the Portland State University Student Union, we've saw Burgerville become like one of the strongest and one of like the only like really super strong new fast food unions in the country. We see people organize, well, we're not with the IWW, we do see people organizing with the IWW outside of the kind of the traditional union bureaucracy that you see in other workplaces that are organizing with bigger unions and struggling hard, but making really big gains, really significant gains that are setting those precedents for
and other. And I think they're about to make some more gains.
Hey,
so anybody from Burgerville listening, come on the show and give us an update, because we know that you got one. Okay.
And yeah, I don't. And also, like Powell's Books, entity in Portland that people love so much, has had a strong contract with the ILWU now for a while. I think since the early 2000s, the late 90s. And so there are so many precedents that have been set here in Portland. And on top of it, the marriage between general struggle against capitalism and union organizing, I think, is very strong in Portland. So we're just excited to continue to be a part of it, especially with Universal Preschool now on the rise and coming into political prominence as the election comes.
Yeah, that Universal Preschool now coming out of DSA, getting as much popular support as it is, might win.
Yes.
And has a very good chance of setting a precedent for the rest of the country. People are looking at this, and there will be similar campaigns that will maybe be bigger, better, more effective, get bigger wins. With Burgerville and the Little Big Burger, those unions do very explicitly say that capitalism is the problem. The IWW, the DSA are explicitly anti-capitalist organizations. And it's true. Even other unions, when they're out doing their pickets, you listen to the chants that are in the crowd. You look at the information that's being put out. People are being much more open about saying that the reason that their bosses are, you know, being so horrendous is, you know, not necessarily because they were just, you know, raised by horrible people, you know, who gave them bad values. Maybe they did. In fact, never mind. But because of the capitalist system itself.
Yeah.
And that is something that hopefully won't be special to Portland, and will be something that will be more widely understood, especially like you were getting at with the elections coming up. People are talking about socialism at like every debate.
Yes.
People, you know, pundits on cable news are having to defend capitalism as it is.
Yeah.
When people are seeing the kind of destruction and despair that it is waging on people, and we have a very popular candidate that is calling it out and wants something better and is getting attacked for it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are understanding that the status quo is not an inevitability and that things actually can be better. And while Bernie isn't perfect,
there is another alternative.
There is an alternative, and it's the socialist alternative. Shout out socialist alternative, Alyssa and I are former members. Anyway,
oh my! Did you see that Shama introduced Bernie?
Yes, that's a comment.
She did that. So good.
Oh, comrade! Very good. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, people are like, capitalism is having to be defended in a U.S. presidential election. And while Bernie isn't perfect, one thing that he is doing that is so deeply important is like bringing that to the forefront and making that a mainstream idea that like things can be better and things can actually be radically changed and that is sustainable and that doesn't have to be like begged for and that isn't a pipe dream. And that's why it's so important for workers in their workplaces, no matter how you're being treated, to be unionized. And that is one of the most significant things I think about our work right now is that we do feel supported in some ways compared to other people in our field, and we know that we can do better, and we still understand that our work is undervalued, and we understand that all work is valuable and all workers deserve to have the absolutely most fully supportive compensation that they can possibly have.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that I'm flexible on with that. That's the phrase that I use with my kids. I'm not flexible. I'm not flexible on being fully supported for wages and benefits. Just like, I'm not flexible about you playing with your dish like a drum at the table.
Great.
Great.
Well, I love you draw that comparison for them. You are inflexible about your own exploitation. Congratulations, you are a revolutionary.
Some things are choices, some things are not choices, some things are flexible, some things aren't flexible, and I'm not flexible in that.
So, yeah, while I think most workers know that they have the right to join a union, it's just too hard.
It's very hard.
And it is something that they don't feel like they have the tools and the courage, the wherewithal to undertake. So it has to become easier to join unions. That's one of the things that Bernie's talking mm-hmm. about in his campaign. People should look at his platform about how he intends to do that. So people who are having to work at a job that they don't like and they think, yeah, I know that I can have a union, but I don't have the energy to undertake mm-hmm. it. Look at that platform and see how he plans to make it easier to join unions.
Yeah, it's so crazy how much work was done to guarantee workers certain rights through the history of this country, and then how hard people... I've been organizing for a long time, but I've learned so much about labor organizing in the last like year. Like, I've learned more about organizing in the last year than I had probably learned in the 2 years before that. Like, and so I'm having all these thoughts. And it's just so crazy that after all of... like the rights in the 30s and 40s that people literally like fought and died for, that
The police used to just kill you if you were out there.
Literally, people died
for
us to have just a contract mm-hmm. at our job, and for things that we take for granted now that you have whether you're in a union or not. And still, even at our workplace where we are treated relatively well and where we are like seen as valuable in some ways, and not just like disposable, like people who are working at like Amazon, we still come up against friction when we say, cool, we want some more money, we want some better insurance, we're gonna unionize because that's literally our right and nothing can stop us, and we want to work together to have a concrete way to see this through. And still, like, after what people fought and died for, even well-meaning bosses will be like, it's just, I don't know, I just don't know what to do with this. I mean, we can just talk about it. We don't need a contract. Mm. No. If you value your workers, then you should be willing to give them any protections to, like, protect the pay and the compensation that is their right.
So if someone works at an early education center somewhere else and they're hearing this,
mm-hmm.
or someone who they love is listening and mm-hmm. wants to pass along the message, where should they start? What should they do to begin?
Talk to your coworkers. Talk to the coworkers that you know and ask them about their experiences. Ask them how they feel. Ask them about their lives. and how they think they could be better supported. And I don't know, do a little bit more each day and see who's on board and start meeting, going out for drinks, going out for coffee, talking, and maybe probably educating yourself too about other union struggles in your area.
Also, our email is gsworkersunion@gmail.com. So if you want to talk to people who are going through it, you're welcome to email us.
Excellent. Yeah. Make
that connection.
Yeah, but make it a more broad movement in Portland that people who are working in early childhood education, like regardless of who their boss is, like, you know, like that would be.
I would love to see a bunch of early childhood education unions come up in the next few years. That would be amazing.
And know that it's very scary, but you're not alone, especially right now, because we're here and Universal Preschool Now is here.
And I'm sure your coworkers have similar grievances as you. And you can get together, and you're a lot more powerful than one person.
So what is next for y'all?
So again, yeah, we are coming up on our election soon in the next few weeks. And the main thing that you can do to support us is to show out on March 7th from 1 to 3 p.m. in Peninsula Park to come to our community support rally and tell people about it, bring all the people that you can, and go to our social media, which is... Growing Seeds Workers Union on Facebook and GS Workers Union on Instagram. Share the posts on there. Share our posts from when we go public. Tell people about it. And yeah.
And if you want to contact us, we also have buttons and we'll have shirts for sale really soon. Logos are so cute.
Okay. Yeah, I do. I like that logo.
We have children's size ones too. We have onesies. Yeah.
Yeah, baby. We have a
onesie. What about onesies for adults?
We don't have
those. Oh, please. Oh, my God. All right. Okay.
That's next.
We'll wrap it up. Okay. This is Alyssa Pariah.
Hey, it's Olivia Pace, girl.
And Mason Mimi.
And we are the Growing Seeds Workers Union, except for Alyssa.
We are a part of the Growing Seeds Workers Union. Yeah.
So thank you, Alyssa. I'll see y'all next week. Thank you for listening. The Struggle, KBOO, 90.7 FM. Good night, y'all. Good luck.
Hello, I'm Bob Madar. Join me for episode 5 of the third season of Local Folks Podcast and meet Rick, the manager of Project Action at the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center. Rick was formerly homeless and now devotes his time to helping local folks who are homeless change their lives and find employment and housing. You can find Local Folks at KBOO.FM. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
Hello, we are Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kboo.org, all one word, or message us on Instagram at @PACUnderground.
I just wanna take a little time out. Do you? Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. And we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Thank you for your love, for your care, for your kind.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kbu.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle. Every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBU Community Radio.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right with it.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
You're listening to From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and political commentary. Featuring faith reporter Nia Gray, political commentary from the Prophet of Rage, and calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, Professor Soul. I'm your host.